If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Greetings, travelers.
Yes, greetings, travelers. How y'all doing? I love doing that.
Great, Mark. Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
I love that. To talk back at the computer for us. Doing good.
Yeah, we've been doing so many events that I'm so used to having audience participation when I talk.
I just think you like having audience participation, but I'm going to throw this out there. This is up for pre-order.
It's here. Yeah, the paperback and the beautiful hardcover. Oh my gosh.
So I know you got to see it for the first time yesterday.
It was amazing. I'm still perusing it. I can't believe how good these turned out. Our wonderful typesetter Val, our wonderful editor Bo, and Erica and I typing away. And then Carrie's amazing illustration.
Yeah. Carrie also got herself, because there's a little thing, I'm going to show it on the video, but there's a little bird that we talk about in the book, so we're not going to give much of it away, but Carrie included a little piece of artwork, and we included the bird in the book, and now Carrie has to, for our next one that's being worked on, which is The Dark Heart of the Appalachians, she's got to come up with an amazing thing to put in there, too, so.
Yeah, and we've gotten a few awesome blurbs from some of our friends of the show and also just general reviewers and some kind of big names in the field. So we're very happy that they're all loving it. And it's great. This is the best part of when you've done a book is getting that initial feedback and start realizing, oh, people actually do like what I do.
Well, it's true. And I mean, your books are, you know, bestsellers and stuff in the past, but I think even you can agree that this book, first of all, is bigger than your other books.
It's as big as my last three combined. Yes.
Yeah. But we wrote this book, and I think a lot of people really should know that this is a conversation we're having throughout this book, and that we go with you on this travel and take you through all the parts, which is just a little bit different. But I think what a lot of people are loving about this book is it's not just them being, you know, they get to hear our witty conversations. I'm going to say witty. Yeah. Who knows if they're witty?
Well, it's like taking a car trip with us. You know, you listen to us on the podcast. This is the same thing. This is just a book form of the podcast. And then we'll have the audiobook eventually soon. So Eric and I are planning the time together to record that. And it's going to take some time because it's a big book. So
it is a big book and it's a conversation. But we're hoping to have it out and ready to go before, we can keep our fingers crossed, before the pre-order ends, so that if you want it, you can grab it and listen to it on the road.
Yeah, if not at the same time as the book launch, definitely shortly thereafter, but hopefully soon. But yeah, 'cause it's got to go through quality assurance and all that stuff too. But you don't need to know all the hangups
You don't want the technical things. And so, yes, anyway. So that was that.
That was our shameless self-promotion. So yes, EerieTravels.com. Order now. Yeah. So
there was a little bit of breaking news.
Breaking news.
So Annabelle, being in North Carolina, appears to be creating, I mean, in Louisiana, appears to potentially be creating effects, right?
I did a whole mini-sode on this that should have already aired. So I think I said my piece on it, but basically I'm not 100% sure that that's Annabelle. I think that's one of the replicas that they do own. There's people are like, what? They own replicas of Annabelle? Yes, the Warrens did. There's that famous picture of Lorraine holding Annabelle. And people said, how do you hold her? She's demonic. You're never supposed to hold her. And she said, oh, that was a replica for the newspapers. And guess what? I think that may be what's on tour. So the fact that we've had these fires and other things in the area, I think that's just some coincidences. I think I don't think the end of the world is coming because Annabelle is suddenly on tour. I do believe that the two people behind Annabelle being on tour are doing it for the dollar bills. And that's, I mean, you can't go visit the Warrens' house anymore because it's in a neighborhood. It's been zoned out. They couldn't have their meetings after a while anyway. So I think that's what happened is they can't charge admission. So now they're taking her on the road. But I still don't think it's real Annabelle. Some of the other objects that they're bringing around. Yes. I think they're a little less dangerous anyway, but they're also not as priceless as Annabelle is. So,
yeah. So it's anyway, enough with that. We are celebrating something today.
Yes, today is important. Today is the summer solstice. Woohoo! Woo! Yeah, our Litha to our wicked friends.
Yeah, anybody who doesn't know what these are, what are they, Mark?
Okay, so the summer solstice, our Litha on the Celtic calendar, basically there's four solar festivals or quarter days of the year, and they fall within the wheel of the year in the annual cycle. Now, this basically marks the astronomical beginning of summer on the Gregorian calendar. So people in Scandinavia, like Sweden, Norway, other parts of the world, they celebrate it as midsummer, like the movie. Hopefully not the way they do the movie, but it's basically the celebration of the world coming in. Right now it is the longest day of the year. This is the summer. The sun is over the, I don't know the technical terms. It's basically, we have the summer solstice up here, and in the summer hemisphere, they're celebrating the shorter days and cooler temperatures of winter. And then they reverse in December, as we know. So yeah. It's usually between June 20th and June 22nd. And because the world wobbles a little bit, and we have those 364, 365 days. So that's why it's ever evolving and all that. Yeah. But today it is technically Saturday, June 21st. So this is our solstice episode. And basically since the earth rotates around the sun, it tilts a little bit away, and that this is how we get our seasons. Some a little more dramatic than others, depending on where you live on the earth. Florida has one season. We understand. With those
hurricane season.
Yeah. Hurricane season, random days of winter, summer junior, summer senior, old man summer.
Here, as we're recording this in the beautiful Smoky Mountains, it is a nice 65 degrees. Which we love, which is why we're no longer in Florida. Yay.
Yeah. So this is basically, we're at our maximum tilt, and the sun reaches our, you know, kind of highest point in the sky on this day.
Yes. And
that's why it's the longest day. Now we'll start getting shorter days till we get to the autumn equinox, where it's the equal day, where it's the same distance. And then we'll get to the winter solstice and the dark of winter. We've already done an episode on that.
Yes. So,
and we'll do another solstice, probably special back then. So,
love that. And we love talking about it. So.
Yeah. So how do you celebrate solstice? Right.
I hope
it is Litha.
Mead.
Mead. Yeah. Honey mead is definitely an important way to do this because the bees have been working since spring. And this is the first harvest. Should be around now, but it's that. So for Litha, people just engage in rituals and traditions, basically the same stuff that's been practiced for thousands of years through word of mouth and stuff. So you light bonfires, you celebrate with feasts, the first early harvests. You also do a bit more ancient rituals, and activities to pay homage to nature, fertility, the sun's light, Earth's abundance. And it kind of works just whatever your religious convictions or wherever you are on the map. So it's a celebration of light. And it's also metaphorical. So it's a time to celebrate power and the growing of the seasons. And Gaelic and Celtic and modern day pagans, Druids, everybody tends to observe Litha. And then the rest of us observe solstice.
Like which, you do.
Yes. And they're all kind of dependent on where you are. So I don't know what else to describe, except that it's basically as above, so below, right? So spiritually, the sun's light is the same light that shines within each of us and deep within the planet. So that's what this is all about. You're releasing the dark energy so that we can ascend to heights, right? And make us all connected. So may the, what's the quote is, may the long time sun shine upon you and all love surround you and all the pure light within you guide you on your way.
Ooh, so, that sounds wonderful.
I love that one. And so fun things you can do. Let's say if you don't want to build a bonfire or anything like that. The big thing with summer solstice, it's supposed to be fun. So anything you do must be fun to do, right? don't make this a chore. This is not the, oh, this is not a ritual of angst. This is not a, oh, we have to do these things or we just have to get through them. No, have fun with it. If it's not fun, don't do it. So the basic thing is just pause. Reflect on your light within. Reflect on the light around you. Don't stare at the sun. Don't do that. Unless you have specials. If you've left your glasses over from the eclipse, you can use that. So
Okay, good. Reusing, recycling. I like it.
Exactly. Don't ever feel guilty about if you can't do the summer solstice. It's fine. It's doing whatever you can to celebrate it with love is it. So what do other
positive intention? That's another huge thing. Positive intention.
Yeah. So yeah, that's important. Positive energy. You're bringing out the light from within. Now, any summertime arts and crafts, you know, drawing the sun with your children, you know, drawing flowers is great. Walking out in a flower field or a meadow is just as good. Taking a walk in the woods, letting the light dapple through the leaves. It's fantastic. And that's very, very important. Walking in the morning is very important. Walking at sunset is morning. So you get that morning dew kind of. There's also the tradition of May Day, which is where you dance around the maypole and all that. But that generally starts with a morning prayer, or just getting out in the morning and looking at the sun come up. And then, you know, barefoot walks are highly encouraged on this because you just want to bathe in the light of the sun, right? So one of the other things, what did we do at Renaissance festivals all the time? Flower crowns.
Oh, I was going to say drink mead.
Drink mead. Yeah, that's coming. That's coming. But, you know, if you can't make a flower crown.
Yes.
If you can't make a flower crown, do a paper one like me where I'm allergic. So, making a sun catcher is big on this day, or just making a solstice mandala, not the Mandela effect, a mandala. Sorry, I mispronounced that. So, but just, you know, get creative with your summer activities. You can do finger paints, whatever you feel like doing. And then lastly is kind of tend a nature garden or a nature grove, right? That's what it's all about. Adding greenery to your house or adding greenery to your little altar or your nature table, whatever. One of my favorite things at school was making a human sundial, just standing out and then marking the shadow as it goes through the day, right? With get some kid go around with the chalk outline. That was always fun. And of course, berry picking.
Oh,
can't go wrong with berry picking.
Some berry picking.
Right.
Yeah.
Now I know people who do yoga and I know people who do bonfires. So you know, if you got people who are doing that, great. But these other things are fine. And if you can find a maypole, great.
Or create one. That can be now, a really the most fun activity with kids.
Yes. And there's songs out there. Just don't use the one from The Wicker Man. Otherwise, have fun.
Yeah.
That's the OG true. Wicker Man. Thank you. But if you want to watch Wicker Man on this day, that's a fun way to do. Or Midsummer for our spooky friends. So the last, but not least, certainly, Stonehenge.
Stonehenge. The largest henges in the world. Okay, yes. I'm not going to lie. I thought for the longest time that it was the only henge. I don't think I even knew what the heck a henge is. What is a henge?
No, so, well, for Stonehenge is these giant megaliths, which are giant stones that weigh tons and tons and tons. And they come up, 30 feet, and they weigh so much, and they're stuck into the ground quite a bit. And this is prehistoric. We don't know its true origins to this day. We've been studying it for now nearly a century, even though they've probably been studying it before then, but we kind of know it started around 3100 BC, but it was all the way to 1600 BC. Imagine something that long being built. That is literally 1,000+ years. The pyramids were built faster than this. It's this big circle. They're Saracen stones, and they're into this bank, and they're kind of stuck into it. My goodness. So radiocarbon dating says the stones are probably 3000 BC. So some of them predate that, which is why, okay, they brought more stones. Are they rebuilding, or were they just continuing? We don't really know. But henge is basically precipice or stone. And so the Salisbury word Stanhang is not, you know, that means not far from Salisbury, henge. And that's where we get the name Stonehenge. Because they are big stones. They're just big pendulous rocks. And then Yorkshire started calling them henges from that. Okay. And that's the word that kind of for us English folks, that's the word we use for any time there's a bunch of rocks in an area together. And they just, that's hinges, right? They're all over the place. They're basically there's three different types of hinges. Well, Stonehenge, okay, we'll get back to. But hinges are basically a type of earthwork, generally from the Neolithic period. And they're basically usually circular or oval, but not always. And then there's hinge forms, which are basically like an ordinary hinge where they're kind of circular and all that. But they also have an earthwork of some sort. So like a mound, mm-hmm, or a cairn or something like that. And then there's the hinge enclosures, which are the ones that are basically kind of a super hinge. They sometimes have a ring around another ring, around another ring, or something like that.
And all of these were built by aliens, right?
We don't know. That's the problem. We know for the most part, they were made by folks. We don't know why. It's sometimes we think they're real or they're ritual, that, you know, sometimes they were monuments of curses and they were just trying to protect the land or protect something. Again, we're guessing on all this stuff. It's not like we can go talk to them. Our Wayback Machine doesn't go back that far sometimes.
Our Wayback Machine, I don't know that we'd understand if we could hear them talking anyway. Because
yeah, we need that.
Speak quite the same language that they do.
Yeah, we haven't developed that Doctor Who TARDIS technology that translates the minute you time travel and everybody speaks British. There's a great episode there. I'll go into that later, but it's fun.
Oh my gosh. But so we know this henge was built. I know the Druids utilized Stonehenge, right? Because that's been documented, correct? That they
we think so.
It for something.
Again, we don't know. We think so. We found some Druidic artifacts in that area. The Druids are, again, kind of a forgotten race. We don't have actual, okay, this is what they did. They did this. Then they did this. Then we did it. We're guessing. They did have an oral tradition, but then the Romans wiped them pretty much off the face of the planet, but they kind of snuck around and came back. And if you see anybody practicing druidic rites and they say this is authentic druidic rites, they're as authentic as we think we can get. So it's one of those, we kind of know what happened. We kind of know what they were doing. So we do our best with this. So, so we know Stonehenge, right? There's also
Stonehenge is in England.
Yes. And then you mentioned that the Celtic ones or the Druid ones, there's one called Scarabray, which is in Sandwick. And that's another English location. And this is on the west coast of the mainland and near the Bay of Skull. I'm sorry, gang. I'm screwing up English pronunciations, but these are kind of old archaic English. So, but it's in the Orkney Archipelago of Scotland. It's not England. Sorry. Sorry, you Scots. I apologize. I am Scottish of descent. So my Campbell clan is going to stone me to death because I said
that's
England.
Okay. I'm of Irish descent, so I can just judge you. I don't speak Gaelic either. So go me, you know.
Yeah. So this one was kind of rediscovered. It basically was more of a 10 houses made of flagstones and then kind of earthen dams. And they had some hearths and cupboards and other things like that. And even a primitive sewer system with some toilets and drains. Yeah. So it was probably occupied about 31 BC to about 2500 BC. It is Europe's most complete Neolithic village still there. And it is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. There is a couple. It is older than Stonehenge, older than the pyramids of Giza.
Wow.
And I love people call it Scottish Pompeii because it's so excellently preserved. It got kind of washed over. And how they found it again was there was a nasty storm that killed a couple hundred people. And suddenly they realized they were on top of this. So that's it got recovered and all that. So it was 1850 when the storm hit and hit that bay, and that's the name is a corruption. Scarabray is Scarabra, which was originally a knoll, and so it's just kind of corrupted into that. And the villagers found the reins of the city, and they're like, oh man. So then in 1913 the site was basically plundered by people with shovels who stole a bunch of the artifacts. And then in 1924, another storm comes and washes away a bunch of it. And so that's when they started protecting it. And so by mid-1927, it was protected.
Oh, that's good.
And there was actually people, you could see in 2019, they found a bunch of photographs from people and you could see that they were stealing stuff from the site back when they were early tourists, basically. So it's kind of sad that, again, we're not really 100% sure what it was, what it is, but there we found evidence of furnishings and all this stuff. But it's, apparently something happened just like Pompeii. Something caught them by surprise, and that's why they left stuff like necklaces and teeth and walrus ivory and other things. And there were even remains of meat discovered there. So they had to leave in a hurry, or maybe some sort of last supper occurred and then they had to flee. So who knows?
And you never know, because there are different things and also illnesses. There were some illnesses back then. We haven't even really talked about a huge amount of them other than the Black Plague that could wipe out people very, very quickly and moved very quickly through places like this, you know? Yeah.
Now, the reason we talk about it with hinges, it's not really a hinge, but right near it are the standing stones of Sten or Stenest or Stromness. Again, Orkney, Scotland. And it is definitely, well, not definitely, because there may be older ones that we haven't proven yet. It is most likely the oldest hinge in the British Isles.
Wow.
So they are cared for by the Historic Society of Scotland. And they are standing stones basically on the south bank of a stream that ends at the Loch of Stennis, which is a freshwater loch. or Thanis, I think is the proper pronunciation of this. And it comes from the Old Norse, meaning stone headland. And basically there was a little stepping stone causeway, but now they put in a proper bridge. And there's another stone circle not too far away. We'll come back to that. But you cross about that. And so this is from 1981, a book called The Rites of Gods. And I love this. Let us imagine then families approaching Stainis at the appointed time of year, men, women, and children carrying bundles of bones collected together from skeletons of disinterred corpses, skulls, mandibles, etc., carrying the skulls of totem animals as well, and herding a beast that was to be one of several slaughtered for the feasting that would accompany the ceremony.
I like that.
Sacrificing animals.
Well, I don't love.
I think this was more animals, related to the Norse.
I was just saying I don't like sacrificing animals, but I get it why they did that back then.
Yeah. So, they still think this might have been more associated with the Norse gods. Other antiquarians talked about one stone. They called it the Odin Stone, which stood kind of in the field to the north of the hinge, and it had a circular hole, and it was used by couples for making engagements by putting their hands through the hole.
Oh.
Isn't that beautiful? And it was supposedly, of course, the stone has very magic powers, according to many. And if you take a vow there, it's called taking the vow of Odin. And the stone fell over in 1814, and it smashed to pieces, the Odin stone. So because of that, they started protecting the other ones. And another one fell, but then it was re-erected in 1906. And then they were trying to fix the Odin stone, but that's kind of why it was doubts to its authenticity in some places, because they fixed it a little bit. The big thing of the Stone of Stainis was on Van Morrison's cover of the Philosopher's Stone. So, and that's why it's a heritage site. And here's the great quote about it in Scarabray. The monuments at the heart of Neolithic Orkney and Scarabray proclaim the triumphs of the human spirit in early ages and isolated places. And I like that. I thought that was pretty good. So
this is interesting. So basically I can use an excuse to go on a tour of Europe to look at all the henges, and I could be like, right, I'm doing Merry Travels.
So there's one more right there, the Ring of Brogar.
Ooh.
And it's another stone circle. It's about 6 miles north of the mainland, and it's on the largest island in Orkney. And again, UNESCO World Heritage Site. And it's a stone circle. It is the only major hinge and stone circle in Britain, which is almost a perfect circle. Imagine that back then. And they stand on a little isthmus in the Loch of Stainis. And this is probably the northernmost hinge in Britain. Again, we think there might be others that are lost that might come up in another storm. We don't know. And there may have even been wooden structures at this, because we've got some remains that might have been necessary. There might have even been ditches dug and stuff like that, which would make this almost a remains of a super hinge. And they're still doing ongoing excavations out at this one. They've uncovered some buildings that they think might have been ritual, and they even think some might have been domestic. So people might have lived here. They're finding pottery, tools. They found a stone mace for smashing people's heads in. I'm like, I'm all about maces. That's my favorite weapon. We'll do a whole episode on maces at some point.
I didn't even know that was your favorite weapon. Look, I just learned something.
You learned a thing. You learned a thing. So, but I'm all about bashing in armor. So,
how working out this frustration around you. I think it's commercial time though.
Give me one more second. Give me one more second about this, and then we'll move on. But the big thing about this is they also had another Odin stone.
Wow. That
was there, and it was destroyed by a farmer in 1814. So maybe these were erroneous names for the stones too, we're thinking, but we'll talk more, yeah, after the break.
Prepare to be devoured. The Wolves of Wharton is a 6-part complete book series by Eerie Travels producer Beau Lake. It has been called dark and visceral, steamy, dramatic, and a fresh take on the werewolf mythos. If you like action, adventure, a large serving of body horror, and some steamy relations, the Wolves of Wharton series is for you. Pick it up wherever books are sold or at linktree.com/Beau_Lake.
Okay.
I just love that anybody who watches this on YouTube is like, what? We have to put the brakes in there, guys, for our wonderful and talented producer who yells at us otherwise. So
we'll try to get some video commercials at some point for y'all. But I think you'd rather us not on the YouTube version, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah. I think you'd rather see our gorgeous faces, you know.
So some people are saying, hey, these names of these stones, they're erroneous, right? The Druid Circle, the Sacrificial Altar, the Brogdar at least has runes on it.
Oh, that's good.
Including one that has the name Bjorn, and one has a little cross and anvil. So we also know at least people have been doing wonderful graffiti as long as we can remember. That's my favorite thing to do at the Roman Forum and any of the Roman ruins is read the stuff on the wall.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So, but maybe Bjorn's the artist, the architect, and he signed his work. You know, we don't know.
My God. That's actually funny if you think about it, because we just assume things, right?
Yeah.
And that is not at all, you know, kind of what's occurring. So we just assume, and then we're like, oh, yeah, no, that was somebody who was actually just fiddling around one day with a knife. Some, you know, maybe that was a teenager. You know how people like carve their name into old wooden tables? Some teenager carved his name in the stone with, like, Bjorn was here is what it used to say.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I like the one in Roman. There's one is like, it's basically the whole, those who write on bathroom walls or there's one that's basically a Roman equivalent of that. So yeah, who knows? But anyway, there's been statistical analysis of these hinges. There's been all this stuff. And there's little justification that this was, especially this one, was used for the things they think it might have been. That it might have been astronomical observations of the moon, but the burial mounds are still not properly dated. And we're not exactly sure the astronomical powers of the builders. They may have been more advanced than we thought, or they may have been less advanced than we thought. That's the problem. The main theory right now is that Scarab Ray was the home of the privileged class, right? The richer, the wise men, and that they use these other sites for magical ceremonies or astronomical observations. That's the best we've got right now, but there is no archaeological evidence for any of this. There is a road connecting Scarab Ray with some other tombs and the two that goes near these sites, but it doesn't really connect them. So again, there may have been an older road that we just haven't found yet.
And it could be aliens.
It could be.
I keep saying that because I feel like I saw some ancient aliens episodes on this kind of thing. And I'm like, yeah. I always think it's funny when people go, it had to be aliens. I'm like, you are grossly underestimating our people in history.
Yes.
They weren't all cavemen.
Yep. So now we go to Avebury.
Okay.
Which is another Neolithic henge. And this is like 3 stone circles. And they're around the village of Avebury, which is in Wiltshire, which is in southwest England. Now, this is probably one of the best known prehistoric sites, because it contains one of the largest megalithic stone structures in the world. So it's really a tourist attraction, and contemporary pagans, this is their all. This and Stonehenge are like the two most important. Even them, some people are like, yeah, Stonehenge is nothing compared to Avebury. So it's now kind of the new Stone Age, right? This one's from the 3rd millennium BC, and it's huge.
Wow.
And when I went to see this one, I was like, I thought Stonehenge was big. This is wow. And for those of you who see Stonehenge on TV or anything like that, it looks tiny because generally, yeah, you got to film it from a little bit away. Whenever you see anybody walking through Stonehenge in a show, that's generally a replica.
Yeah.
Because they generally don't let anybody there. Now, Avebury is just giant. And considering that it basically got abandoned by the Iron Age, but then we're seeing some where they moved back to it during the Roman ages. And during the Middle Ages, that's when the villages started coming around it, eventually kind of even going into it. And that's, you know, the local people basically destroyed a lot of the stones around the hinge, mostly for practical reasons, I assume. Hey, we need to build a house. Hey, let's get some rocks.
Well, I mean, they're just rocks. And if they have no idea the significance of them or why they were placed there. My question, so you say it's huge. How big are the rocks of Stonehenge? Like if you were to stand next to one, do you know?
Stonehenge, trying to remember off the top of my head. They're huge though. Hold on. Let me clackety clack here for a second. I'm just going to pull up Stonehenge height and see what we get. So they go around 13 feet high.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. That's huge.
That's big. That's two of me and an extra. So a little bit. So, and I'm a pretty tall guy, but Avebury, they go 18 feet high.
Oh, wow.
So that's another 5 feet.
That's
so
huge.
I just remember it being swarming me. And we don't really know how old this one is because it's so difficult to carbon date. Yeah, there's now, gosh, they estimate because of the pollen in it, it's so poorly preserved and some other things like that. So they've even found like snail shells in the rocks that, you know, deposits and stuff like that. So there it's still Neolithic. We know that there was dense oak land in the area. So we think that's what's left some of this stuff. It's probably 11,000 to 7,000 BC, which is crazy. That makes it so much earlier, but we're pretty sure that it's probably built in the 3000s as well, 3000 BC to 2900 BC, which would make it about the same age as Stonehenge, but they were just using older rocks. So,
well, and that's the other thing. It's interesting. They're trying to carbon date it from the actual rocks, but the rocks could have been there for a millennia because when you go, I'm sure if you took the marble slab that's on my countertop and carbon dated it, you know, like I don't have a marble slab, I have granite, but I mean, you get my point. Like I could take one of, you know, my granddaughter's rocks that she collects, we could carbon date it and go, how old is this rock? Well, this rock's been around for 3 million years. Like, that doesn't mean that's when they moved it, right?
Right, right. And so this one has the hinge, which is the, you know, the usual monument of the circular we were talking about. Then it has an outer stone circle, so which is also the largest stone circle, if not 100% the largest, it's close. And this was either built around 5 or 6 centuries after the hinge was built. So it's thought to have 98 standing stones, each over 40 tons. And they range from 12 foot to 15 foot.
Wow.
And that's just insane. And that they generally had a smooth surface. So we think they probably had the things on top like Stonehenge did. Stonehenge still does. Now, then there's an inner stone circle. There's separate inner stone circles, and they are around 98 meters, which is, you know, 300 plus feet in diameter, and but only two of their standing stones, which they assume 4 to 6 are left.
Oh,
and
wow.
So those are the ones that probably got chopped up and all that. They do believe that any sound, if it was all together and you would talk in there, it would echo like we had at the Mothman domes.
Right? Oh, my gosh.
Almost that exact same effect. Yeah.
Maybe they use that to talk to large groups. Wouldn't it be funny if the entire point of these henges was to be an amplifier? Like it's literally an old-timey microphone so that they could talk to. That would be hysterical if that is the entire reason for a henge to exist.
Wouldn't it be great if it was for rock bands?
Oh, I really wish you hadn't said that out loud.
The dad in me, I couldn't pass it up. So
the dad jokes. What's interesting to me too is we're both 6 feet tall. So these things are 2+ feet the size that we are. Yep. And we're not tiny people.
No,
and back then people were very tiny. I don't know, because Vikings were said to be pretty large.
They were supposed to be near 6. So, but still, this is double them.
Yeah. You know?
And then there are 2 avenues there.
Oh.
That were paved stones leading from like southeast to the northeast. But we think one of them's completely gone. We think there was a second avenue. There's traces of it that goes from east to west. And that's why they think, okay, maybe this was in conjunction with those other ones that way in the north. But we still don't know. It's why was it here? It's elusive. It could be a meeting place, like you said. It could be a festival place. We don't know. We're guessing. There's been a ton of excavations there. We know people inhabited it and then left and then came back, left all the way up through modern age. Now, again, Druids, Wiccas, they all worship it as a living temple. And they are associating with their ancestors. And that's great. Feel free. And it also brings in tourists when you're doing your pagan rites at these places, which helps keep them alive. And of course, summer solstice. This is a big festival there. Yeah, there's dozens of others. I love Newgrange in Ireland, which is in County Meath, Ireland. And it's overlooking a nice river. This one's another circular mound with an inner stone passageway. And this one even has an inner chamber with burnt and unburnt human bones. So it was either a grave offering site or a votive offering site, or maybe a place, let's get rid of our prisoners.
I mean, there could be that. It could be people are old. We need to get rid of them.
Yeah.
You know?
And this one was used a lot in Irish folklore and mythology. It's supposed to be the dwelling place of the deities.
Oh.
Particularly the Dagda and his sons. Yeah, it's had some fun rituals done there as well. The standing stones there's 12 of them. There were probably closer to 40, they think, originally. But most people say they were added much later, like in the early Bronze Age.
Oh, wow.
Basically, it had already been abandoned, and then they brought the stones later. So, again, carbon dating at this place, really, really tricky. Again, there's debates on its purpose. Astronomical, faith, cult of the dead. Now, the winter solstice rises directly along its long passage and illuminates the inner chamber. And, the spirals on the front wall get lit up right at winter solstice. So, interesting, right?
Very.
I love all these hinges and everything. So, what do we do with all this, right?
Yeah.
One, we got to do an American one, right?
Yes.
Before we wrap up, there's Serpent Mound, which we talk about in Erie, Appalachia. It doesn't have a Stonehenge, but it has a huge Neolithic structure made by early American Indians of Ohio area. And it's an effigy mound, which means it's in the shape of an animal. And it represents a snake with a curled tail and likely only one eye. So we think it might be an effigy of the Great Serpent,
okay,
which is Native American lore, that's the ruler of the underworld. You have the Thunderbirds above. Then you have the us in the middle. And then underneath, the Great Serpent. And then under the water, Mishapeshu, which is the underwater panther. And we've discussed that all before with our sea serpent episode and stuff like that. But Stonehenge does, the big thing about it is its head lines up with the summer solstice.
Oh, that's so true.
Now, some people think it looks like a snake and then its head. And then there's this big circle area, which is a little mound in front. So, of course, early English settlers were like, oh, they know the Bible. It's the serpent eating the apple.
No,
not likely. It was likely the one eye of the Great Serpent. The Great Serpent only has one eye, and it would have, and just part of the mound faded because it'd been abandoned for a long time. There are other mounds around it, so we assume different tribes moved in, different tribes moved out, the different cultures were there, but basically, we think it was the Fort Ancient culture that was there, which would have been about 1500 AD. So it's not Neolithic. It was probably a bit more modern, but that's still 1,000 years ago for us. That's true. And the fact that radiocarbon dating, though, now thinks it might be the Adena, which is about 300 BC, which makes it 1,000 years earlier than we thought. So we got to do a lot of work on this. And the problem is there's no artifacts. So it's stuff to carbon date. You can't, like you said, you can't carbon date Earth. What we've covered was, you know, we did the reason Fort Ancient popped up so much. They must have been burning stuff there or using stuff there as rituals and all that. Again, that's 1,000 years after what we think, because now we finally found some evidence that it's even earlier. And I'm not even going to get into the whole thing that it might be Mishapeshu instead of all of that. Now, we do have to talk about America's Stonehenge. It was once a private archaeological attraction in Salem, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And it was, so basically this guy was conducting experiments in the 1980s, and he found a megalith stone quarry. And he started excavating the stone quarry, and this is in New Hampshire, and he found chips and flakes from the stones. And he says, oh, this is tool manufacturer. What's fun is no date can be ascertained on this stuff, but no Bronze Age manufacturing is there. No single European manufacturing was ever there. So then they found a Native American wigwam remains in that area. And then they found fire pits that date back to about 2,000 years ago. Again, we can carbon date fire. So that's the beauty. And so then suddenly it becomes, they found, these stones everywhere. And it's an ancient site from the quarries. And, look, there's a sacrificial altar. And there's all these other things. So, and now this guy believed very quickly that this was built by Saint Brandon, who sailed to North America sometime in the 500s or 600s. So he's convinced that this was made by Irish monks in the 500 or 600 AD. it's crazy. This one was so inspiring. H.P. Lovecraft wrote about it in the Dunwich Horror. We think, anyway. We do believe there were some pre-Columbian people who were there, and that, of course, became a In Search Of and a History Channel episode. Yeah. And, of course, X-Files, famously, they mention it as that a place that some kids talking about, we went there on a field trip. So it gets mentioned quite a bit. It's interesting. Granite from it was used for the Georgia Guidestones, which got blown up. And then some of the granite got used for the Maryhill Stonehenge, which is in Maryhill, Washington. And that's still there. And it's just a Stonehenge replica. It looks like what Stonehenge should have looked like when it was complete. So there's plenty of places for y'all to visit.
Yes.
One last mention is Coral Castle, which I wrote about in Florida, which was its giant coral stones. And it was built by one man named Edward Leeskin, who was a little 5 foot tall immigrant. And he built it all himself. And everybody says, oh, he built it using space techniques. They used it building all these other crazy special powers, and that he could sing to the stones and levitate them. It took the man almost 20 years to build this thing. If he could sing to stones, he would have built it in a weekend. If you go there, they're all like, we don't know how he built it. It's amazing. It's astounding. But then they have pictures of him using pulleys and stuff like that. It's like, that's how he did it right there.
Like using logic and engineering.
And science and engineering. And yes, it's still impressive that one man did this. And that is why you cannot, I mean, some of that stuff weighs 1,000 tons.
Yes.
And how did he do that? You know, basically limestone. And he learned how to make, quarried materials into that coral mix. And it's incredible. If you go there, you will flip out just looking at the creations. He had a door that could just rotate with a single push that weighed several hundred tons. You could push it with a finger. And this is built in the time of the Model T.
Yeah.
And how did he do that? Well, yeah, a lot of special work and a lot of good engineering. But he was not taught engineering. He was self-taught all this stuff. That door only broke when Hurricane Andrew came in and knocked it off its hinge, off its thing. And that now we were able to find out, it was an axle from a Model T that he had balanced it on somehow. That's incredible. How do we argue that was an amazing creation? We can't just say, he's sang to the stones. Yeah, that's awesome. But he built that himself. That's, I think, even more awesome.
So, agreed.
And what happened was, at one point, he had built this, and then he found out they were going to put a road and a subdivision right next to it. So he moved it 10 miles away.
Wow, really?
Basically, basically in 2 weeks, so he could be near the main highway and he could charge admission.
Wow. I mean, that's so clever. I will give him clever on that.
Yeah. And it's pretty epic. It's pretty epic. So there are, I don't think it was aliens or paranormal. I think it's actually an insult to say that about Edward, because wow, what amazing stuff.
Agreed.
So your travel for celebrating solstice, if you can't make it to Stonehenge, they live stream it. So you just got to wake up early here in the U.S. because remember, time difference, a few hours earlier, and you can watch that early morning sunrise festival at Stonehenge. It's epic. And you can compare the sights of the little people, because they don't film too close, but you can see the people standing next to those rocks and you'll get a sheer sense of scale there. I do believe Avebury streams theirs now as well. So you can watch both of those. My goodness. And then US, there's plenty of places. Coral Castle does a festival. Serpent Mound does a festival. You can't actually go on the mound, but you can be right next to it and all that. They actually do the stone. They do one at Fort Mountain, which is an area in Georgia. I didn't really talk about it because it's not really a hinge. It's a wall that we don't know the origin of that may have been built by the Moonite people. Something available in Eerie Travels Presents Dark Side of the Smoky Mountains. Available now for pre-order.
Exactly. No, I think we have lots of fun travels. And you know what? Travelers out there, if you have stories regarding henges or you have information, send it to us. We would love to hear your stories. You can go to eeritravels.com and just pop us a note. We'd absolutely love to hear any experiences you've had, or even maybe, legends from your family.
Yeah.
And at that mark, I want to go drink my honey mead, wear my flower crown, and dance naked in the moonlight. So what do you have for travelers today?
Well, travelers, again, thank you, patrons, for keeping us afloat. Thank you, all of you, for liking, sharing, and subscribing. And for YouTube guides, hit the little button down on the little bell. We'd appreciate that. And all of you out there listening on the podcast, please rate us, share us, tell your friends about us, and look for us at our future events, eerietravels.com. You can get an autographed copy of the book ahead of pre-orders. But if you know, if you don't mind waiting, stick that pre-order in there and get it sent to you when we can. All that said, travelers, when you're heading out there on this beautiful summer solstice, just enjoy the light. Experience that light within. Go look at a pile of rocks and imagine what they once were. And just think about your ancestors and the happy times they had. And don't get sacrificed on a rock. And we'll see you on the other side.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.